Welcome to The Thriving Marriage, the podcast for those who want to get their spouse back in love with them and truly thrive.
You'll learn why 95% of people don't save their marriage and the secret method no one else is talking about that will change everything for you. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Let's turn tragedy to triumph.
Here are your hosts, international marriage experts, Mark Johnston and Heather Choate.
All right. Welcome everyone here to the Thriving Marriage Podcast, podcast episode number 5. I am here, you could call it in studio, with Mark Johnston, our international marriage expert. And today we're going to share with you why 95% of people don't save their marriage. And if it's possible for you to save your marriage, is it possible for you to get your spouse back if they're pulling away or pushing for divorce? But before we get to that, we're going to start off with our client win of the week. And Mark's going to share with us a really awesome one here.
Yeah, I was actually really excited to hear this from one of our clients. Trish had posted in one of the Facebook groups sharing with everyone because it was, frankly, it was exciting news. So she wrote in the post here that my wife and I reconciled our marriage commitment over the weekend after being apart for 3 months. She put her wedding rings back on before I arrived to go on our date on Friday night. We spent the entire weekend together and it was fantastic. Now it's time to make sure we stay that way. So this was a huge win. And here's the thing. I really like that last sentence that she put there. Now it's time to make sure that we stay that way, because obviously when there's big problems like this, it's not just about getting over that first hurdle. It's, can you maintain a lot of these changes? And I think time and time again, this is what people start asking when they start hitting these big walls, when they start hitting these problems in their marriage. They say, can we actually keep up any changes that are happening? And so I'm glad that she recognized that as well. But this was a big win from Trish, and we're really happy to share it with everyone here.
I agree, Mark, what you pointed out there. Now it's time to make sure we stay that way, which is another win in even of itself, that her mindset is in the right state, that this is for the long haul. And sometimes when we see wins like this, or we look at transformation pictures, you know, the before and after, the weight loss photos, it's easy to see kind of the peak of the mountaintop, and we don't realize all the work and the effort that got to that point and all of the internal shifts that had to happen for those external results to show up. And then the long-term kind of maintenance and the other end of the whole picture, right? It takes a lot of work, and she's definitely celebrating being on one of those mountain peaks, and she deserves that, but also having the perspective that it's a journey, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So let's go to why 95% of people don't save their marriage. And this is something that Mark and I have touched on before in our master classes. And it's really important that we get some clarity on this. One of the most common things that we hear from about 95% of the people that we work with, and this is why they don't actually save their marriage, is they have no clue why their spouse is leaving. If you ask them, why does your spouse want out? They'll go, I don't know. It just happened out of the blue. It just, you know, hit me one day and I was totally unaware of what was going on. Or they'll say some of the surface level things. Exactly. Like, well, they say they're in love with someone else. They say they're not happy anymore. They say maybe they need to find themselves. And Mark, we touched on this last week in our podcast 4, those are never the real reasons.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Exactly what you said there. They'll come our way and they'll say, well, they're pulling away because they started an affair. Okay, well, and we have to kind of take some time to help them see the point that, okay, the things like the affair or the arguments and fights or whatever might be pulling them apart, they don't just come out of nowhere. It doesn't just appear out of thin air. There's other things going on here. And when I was actually, you know, going over this topic, you know, why would someone want to leave a marriage? I wanted to start in a different spot. You know, what do people actually get out of a long-term relationship? Because I think that's a more important question to ask here if we're going to understand, you know, why would someone leave? Because pretty much if they're not getting what they're looking for, that's going to be a huge factor here. So I'm just curious, Heather, what do you get out of your marriage with Ben?
Oh, man, that's such a good one. So if I were to kind of put it all into a nutshell, I mean, we bring an immense amount of security to one another. And I'm sure we'll touch on this later about the human needs, right? Our basic human needs. But we bring that comfort to each other. And for me, my biggest, you know, emotional need is growth. And so Ben brings me some challenges and some growing opportunities and helps push me. So that makes me feel alive. But I would say essentially it's knowing that we're there for each other no matter what, and through whatever challenges, it's that safety net, it's that security and that comfort of having a partner with you through the thick and the thin, through the sickness and the health, as our marriage so clearly shows and our journey over the years. You know, in richer, poorer, better or worse, that we stand by each other. Yeah, how about you, Mark? What would you say you get out of your marriage?
Well, I think, you know, some of what you said and some of what I'm probably going to say is applicable to a lot of marriages. I think there is elements of, you know, some sense of security. For me, one of the biggest things in my marriage that I really looked for and that really benefits me, I have a sense of belonging with Jen. Just the idea that, okay, I can be with her. There's this connection that it feels good to be around her. And like you said, that sense of security that we're going to, someone's going to be there for me. I'm going to be there for them no matter what happens. And like I said, and I think this touches on just some basic needs that most people have and most people are looking for in their relationships. There might be some variations here. Like you were saying, you really look for that, that sense of growth that Ben really brings that to you. And you know, I'm just going to admit, I actually pulled this idea from someone else. The person's name is Chloe Madonis. Now I believe she works with Tony Robbins. I'm sure some of you have heard that name. It maybe if not, Chloe Madonis, but she kind of came up with this idea of some six basic emotional needs. And I happen to like this theory. I mean, there's lots of different needs theories. I'm sure, you know, a very famous one is Maslow's hierarchy of needs. There's, you know, lots of different ways of explaining needs. But I think this one fit really well for explaining relationships. Chloe Madonna's the six basic emotional needs. And you and I touched on some of those, others. Just to run through the list really quick, these are needs for stability or certainty, like you mentioned, some connection or belonging, like I mentioned here, feelings of value or worth, even some fun and variety. You mentioned their growth is one of them, and a need for contribution. And in my opinion, the better a relationship meets these needs, the more likely they are to stay together, to get married in the first place, and to have a really happy marriage. I don't know. What do you think about that? Is it just about needs here and what we're getting out of this?
Well, let's go back to like thinking about when we were first married. Maybe this will make it a little bit clearer for everyone. Think about when you were first married and the things that you craved from that person, the way that they made you feel, the kind of experiences that you had together, right? It was all about that connection. It was about feeling valued, feeling like you were significant, that you mattered, feeling like they were significant, that they mattered, having fun together, kind of that passion and connection, right? Mm-hmm. And then that grew into stability, that grew into this idea that we're going to be there for each other and that we're going to accept each other no matter what. At least that's the intention most of us start with, right? And so typically a relationship forms when we start to have those emotional needs met. And that's kind of the birthing ground for a relationship. And then the work that we need to do longer term is to keep those things strong, to keep them thriving. That's our favorite word here at High Thrive Coaching and with the Thriving Marriage Podcast, is that they're not just stagnant and they're not dying, but they're truly thriving no matter what kind of circumstances or challenges come our way.
So then the question that I think needs to be asked here, you know, pretty much everyone, I'm of the opinion that most people wouldn't really get married for the most part. And there's probably some edge cases here, unless they really feel like these needs are being met well. They might not be consciously thinking about it, but it feels good. So what really happens then over a long-term relationship when people start pulling apart?
I love looking at this. I think this is really important that we kind of diagnose it. I like to reverse engineer things, and I also like to uncover like this what the root issues are, as we always do here with our method, rather than like the symptoms, because the symptoms show up, and like we said at the beginning, like 95% of people don't really know. They don't really know why their spouse is leaving. They don't really know why their spouse is in love with someone else. They don't really know why their spouse is pushing for divorce. So it's really important that we can get to the root issues of some of those things. And so some of the really common ones here is, you know, that we get complacent, right? Mm-hmm. We stop appreciating each other. We stop seeing the good in each other. We stop working on things. My daughter and I are growing like the most pathetic little vegetable garden, but I'm so proud of it. You know, it was her idea. We were at Lowe's the other day and she was pulling packets of seeds off the wall. And I was like, oh my goodness, we just moved. I don't want to do a garden, but fine. If you want to put some seeds in the dirt, great. And if they grow, whatever. But then we got so committed to it. even to the point where we were traveling and then, you know, paid a teenager to come over and water the garden for us, because we knew that if we started to neglect those little plants, you know, our zucchini and our pumpkins are going to suffer. And by the time we would get back, they would be dead. Right. And so just like the analogy of a garden or the analogy of seeds, we have to continually nourish those things. And I can't just say, oh, I watered yesterday. I don't need to water for like 4 more days. I'm good, you know, and forget that and neglect it, because then it would die. And that's the same kind of thing that happens in our relationship, right?
Oh, absolutely. I can remember sometimes, usually around the, centered around the birth of one of our children, where, you know, Jen and I would get really busy and it would be easy to just kind of go into our own little world. And, you know, we'd get accustomed to being around each other, but not really taking time specifically for each other. I remember this last time. So we had our fifth child. He's almost two now. He'll be two in, well, I guess it's still a while, November. And Jen and I hadn't gotten out on a date, I think, in 4 months. I mean, it had been a while. There's some health problems with our boy when he was first born. And I noticed we were kind of snapping at each other a little bit more and just weren't really seeing each other. And until we started saying, okay, you know what? We actually need to take some time for each other. We need to actually work on our relationship a little bit. And everything smoothed out just fine. But this happens. I think a lot of relationships kind of ebb and flow with this. It's what happens when people start drifting apart is it just keeps ebbing and they keep, it gets into a bit of a cycle where they get used to not being around each other and don't ever really repair that.
Right. I think what you pointed out there was really important. It's not like we intentionally say, I'm going to neglect you or I'm going to become complacent, right? It's just that life becomes very busy. There's different challenges that happen and we kind of take our focus off of it. Last week, we talked about the law of focus, that what we put our focus on grows, right? Where energy goes, there it flows, right? It grows and it flows. So it kind of goes both ways. And so when we don't have our focus there anymore, then it's easy to get sidetracked. It's easy to get busy. It's easy to let other problems of life, like work, kids, just the stresses of life, to cause us to drift apart, right?
Yeah, I was actually thinking about this a lot just recently. I was just talking with my parents the other day, and I thought this was a big thing. It was, even though it was a couple years ago, it still kind of sticks in my mind. So a couple years ago, my parents celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary. We had a big party for them. Yeah. They've been a really good example. So they had 8 children, you know, myself included. I was the 7th. And, you know, but now that I'm looking back, I saw like even throughout they were happy together, and I can see that they're happy together now. And I asked them, you know, around that time when we were having the party, I was like, okay, what did you actually do? And one of the things my dad says was, you know, one of the big things is that they always made each other a priority, you know, just kind of a broad rule. I mean, he's not one to really talk about these sort of things at length, but he did make that conscious decision. I think a big part of why they've been happy together for so long. And so, I mean, we don't always want to assume that, okay, long-term relationships are always going to get complacent. I think there's also another cycle that can happen. We're talking about the cycle where people kind of get complacent and get used to that and then drift further and further apart. There's like, it can certainly go in the other direction. What do you think would really make it go, you know, where everything's really great and it gets better? If you, what do you think, Heather?
Right. So it's definitely putting forth that attention. Sorry, intent. Okay, I can talk. The intention and the attention. Like your parent said, they made each other a priority. And so if we only have so much time, like we all have only 24 hours in a day, we all have things that we need to attend to. There's all different things that we must do. But if we are not putting our spouse into that day and not putting them into our lives and into our attention, that's when the trouble starts. So to get it going in the right direction is to put forth that intention. For me personally, I have an intention that says that my marriage with Ben is strong, thriving, passionate, and fun, and that we go on adventure dates together, we support each other, and we look for the best in each other. Something like that. Putting on my bathroom mirror. You
know, that last part there, you're looking for the best in each other, I think is a big factor here too. One thing that Jen and I decided a long time ago is that we would be much more vocal about being appreciative of all the little things that we do for each other. And so even to this day, you know, multiple times per day, we'll be sure to either point out our own efforts or to acknowledge the efforts of the other person, just to keep up that kind of air of making sure that the other person feels acknowledged, that they're important, that we're seeing that that positivity in our relationship. I think it's a good habit that we've developed. So
we just got a really good comment here, and we will definitely get to that. See, we do this, we record this for, you know, iTunes and Spotify and all the podcast platforms, but we do it live in our Thriving Marriage Facebook group. And sometimes we get some really incredible comments that I definitely want to make sure that we get to this. That what if your husband is making the other woman a priority? I just don't know if I can push past this. And so right there is where we need to get to the root reasons of why that's going on, instead of the symptom that they're making another person a priority, right? And start to turn the tide.
It's almost like this person made this comment almost as a natural segue into the next part of our podcast. It's almost like she's looking at our notes, because that's exactly what we're going to be talking about here. So like the question ties in to this other question. Okay, why do they want out? Or why, in her case, why would her husband be making this other woman so much, such a priority? You know, we can go back to what we were saying a little bit earlier. I imagine that, you know, he's valuing that relationship quite a bit, and there's probably a lot of needs that are being met. That doesn't really help the person who commented right now, though. So why do people pull away? Why would he be making this other person a priority? We could blame it on the affair, like we were talking about earlier, but I think that's only scratching the surface. And I think the simple answer is most of the time, people's needs are not being met. Now, I want to add in this clause here. I'm going to say that this isn't always the fault of the spouse. You know, sometimes people can be their own worst enemy in getting their needs met. But I mean, this is essentially what goes on. And I think that they start to crave those needs and they start looking for other options like affairs or divorce, or they get lost in their work, become a workaholic, or maybe addictions. It's because needs aren't being met.
Right. And she says right here, she gave him comfort through shared grief. Yes, meeting his needs. And she was a very close friend of both of ours. So he had a need for emotional comfort in a time of grief. And even there is really good awareness that that need was then being met through this other person. And so what happens is that, you know, simply put, they start seeing other options that would meet their needs with less effort. Okay. And sometimes that there are so many challenges going on in the relationship that our spouse can even see us as an obstacle to their happiness, as something that's preventing them from getting those needs met, right? I keep saying right. I got to break that habit.
Yeah, so I think what you're talking about there is they're seen, when they're seeing other options with less effort, this is what people do all the time. They gravitate towards options that are more accessible, you know, the more immediate, easier. And so I can only imagine, you know, I don't know this relationship that's being, you know, this person is commenting about, but I can imagine that at some point it became a little bit more difficult to share some of that grief with his wife, or it was just the sharing that with this other person was a little bit more immediately gratifying, or maybe even a little bit more intensely meeting the need that he was looking for. And while I'm not going to excuse things like affairs, I think that's a really terrible decision. Divorce is usually a terrible decision. It's important to understand what is mechanically going on. So understanding all this, I think we can move on, you know, to this other question here. Okay, so if this is going on, there's these needs aren't being met, and these other options are a little bit easier or immediately gratifying or more accessible, then what do you do about this? Can you actually get someone back? And I think this is why we shared that client win earlier. So what do you think, Heather? Can someone win their partner back if there's such a strong pull in a different direction?
Well, absolutely. But there's going to be a couple different things that are going to be required. Before we go into this, I just want to make it crystal clear that we do not support affairs in any sense of the way, and think that that's the right choice, because it's not. It's not okay. It's never okay. All right. But we want to understand what's going on in our spouse's mind. We really want to know what's going on in their heart. We want to know what's driving behaviors, because until we know that, then we're just dealing with surface level things. And this is where a lot of people get it completely wrong. They start focusing on those symptoms, and that's where the pain is. And then they get caught up in the pain and in the hurt and in the fear and in the agony and the desperation, that then they don't see clearly the bigger picture. And when you never really truly understand the person, then it becomes nearly impossible, if not completely impossible, to restore the relationship, to reconnect, to rebuild trust, to heal from pain. And so if that is what your intention is, that I want to save this relationship, I want to understand this person, I want to learn from this situation so that it never repeats itself and I become a better person, then this is what we have to do. We have to get deeper. We have to look at what was really going on. And sometimes people don't want to do that because it's hard. The truth is hard. The truth sometimes hurts more than even the symptoms hurt. And so you have to be willing to be brave to be able to learn from it and improve yourself is really where it really comes home.
I think there's some analogies here with, you know, affairs and addictions, and maybe this can help people understand a little bit better. You know, it'd be easy for you to say, you know, you and I, Heather, you know, if we saw someone that was, say, using meth, you know, a very destructive drug, it'd be easy for us to say, okay, well, they should just stop doing meth. That's terrible for them. It's easy for me to say that because that's not my problem. I'm sitting outside. I've never really had a problem with meth. At the same time, that person, you know, they know that they should stop doing meth, or in these other cases, that people might know that they should stop the affair, but they really have a hard time letting go because the meth or the affair meets some needs. And they might not even be aware of this. I can remember talking with someone who actually was addicted to meth. And they would tell me they had a hard time really dealing with a lot of pressures in life. You know, things that people wanted from them, or a lot of guilt that this man was facing from failing his family, from failing other people. And the only thing that really made a lot of those feelings go away was using. And so you could easily say, well, just stop doing it. it's damaging you, but he had no other recourse to deal with those really negative emotions until he got some help. It's the same sort of thing with these affairs. If we just go into, say, we'll just stop doing the affair, that's what the problem is. It doesn't really, they're not going to just set it aside and say, you know what, you're right, most of the time. I don't know about most of that, but, you know, if you're struggling with having your partner stop the affair, this is very likely what's going on. So, yeah.
Real quick, Mark, yeah. I would like to share three examples, real life examples, and I think that this will help clarify things a little bit. Two are an affair, and then the third is not, because we're not just strictly talking about affairs on this. We're talking about why they want out, right? So the first affair, this is shared by us by Leah Smith, and I talked about this earlier in a podcast, but her sharing her story has been so powerful for many people to show what's actually possible. So they had been married for several years, and they were expecting their first baby. A month before the baby was to be born, her husband said, I want out, I'm in love with another woman. And then she came to us a couple months later after trying some different things, working with, you know, counselor and stuff that didn't work and wasn't really helping things. There, in fact, things were getting worse and worse and worse. And then we got to work with her and uncover what the root problem really was. And the root issue was that she had been in some serious depression. Okay. And so this is an example of how it's not just conscious choices always. Okay. I just want to paint the bigger picture, but it's still important to uncover what's going on. So she was in major depression and was not meeting his needs for affection and appreciation, and these different, you know, things that he was really craving. And she didn't see it at the time. Things had kind of just gotten slowly deteriorating, but she didn't really see it until he said that he was in love with someone else, a woman that was meeting his needs for affection and, you know, appreciation and those things. And so when we were able to uncover what the root issue really was, then she started to turn around and be able to show him that she could meet those needs. And she was able to make some changes herself that she didn't recognize before. That was kind of the full picture of what it looked like, to the point where then he left the other woman and now they're happily married and expecting their second baby. So that's it in a nutshell, right? But I really want to hone in on the idea that it wasn't just stop the affair. It wasn't just leave the other woman. That's bad behavior. That was a wrong choice and you need to come back. She had to be willing to look at herself, and even though it was uncomfortable and it was hard, and recognize the things that she were in her control to change. And then she took courage. She had courage and she made those positive changes. She met his needs and then they were able to work on things together. And then, all right, second example is a couple in this one. I'm not going to name the names, but he suffered from extreme anxiety that was very suppressed and was very well controlled on the outside, a very successful businessman. And he turned to pornography to help soothe that anxiety. And anytime that he tried to express how he was feeling to his wife, she would be very dismissive. And so he felt like he was not comfortable sharing with her what he was going through. So that continued to perpetuate the feelings of guilt and remorse and anxiety, which just led going back to pornography. And eventually it led to an affair. And when this woman found out, of course, she was heartbroken and she was distraught. And things completely changed for them night and day when she finally understood what her husband was experiencing and that this anxiety was untreated and not talked about. It was very taboo in their family until he was able to get treatment for that and heal from his anxiety. That's when the symptoms then took care of themselves. That's when he was able to, you know, break the addiction or whatever you want to call it to pornography as a way to soothe that anxiety. And now that they've solved that root issue, their marriage is incredible. It's beautiful. And I know them personally, and they're a stunning couple that have been together for years and years and years now and are truly happy together. So I'm really grateful that this woman was willing to lay aside, not lay aside, that's not the right word, that she was willing to work with him and that she was willing to understand him, that she was willing to have compassion for him, and that he, I'm going to say this on this, the other side, right, was willing to have compassion for her and understand the pain that she was now going through and to work that they could both forgive each other and become better and stronger. All right, last one. Is my dear friend. I'm going to change names again to, you guys have heard me talking about it in the Thriving Marriage here, but Caleb and Dana, and she's not having an affair, but she still wants out of their marriage. The root issue, she's not getting her needs met for affection and appreciation. Again, it's those two. It's pretty common, but, and so now that we're helping Caleb to show her that affection, that brings us right here, Mark, to what we need to do to get them back, which is it's a really big question. And that's exactly what we need to do. And so with those three examples, I hope that you can dissect them and go through them and pull out that we really need to get to the root issues so that we can solve those things and be able to move forward.
So every single case here where I've seen everything turn around, where couples have gotten back together, they've reconciled, had to hit a few points here. They had to be able to, for both partners to feel like they could reliably meet their needs. And I say both here because, you know, a lot of times we work with just one individual and help them to fix their relationship. And sometimes people feel like, okay, well, that means I'm going to have to make some sacrifices. I'm going to have to give up things because I'm going to have to be the one to fix this. But that's not really a healthy situation either. And I don't think that really could reliably lead to reconciliation because it wouldn't feel healthy coming back in for either partner. I get the impression that people would feel like there's something off still. And I could talk about that for days. But the other thing, so for both partners to be able to reliably meet their needs, they feel like they can do that. Other thing that's always in place here, the option to stay has to be easier than leaving, or at least made to be easier. I do see some obstacles happen sometimes when the partner wanting out, they move out and they might get a lease for another place. And so they start stacking up all these external factors that make it harder to come back. And not to say that that's now impossible if that's what's going on, but it needs to be made easier to come back, whether there's some financial stability for breaking the lease or whether there's some, some assurance that those needs are going to be met. Maybe there's, other problems have been fixed, but, you know, it has to be easy to come back. There has to be a larger reward than leaving. A lot of times when people start pulling away from the marriage, they start justifying themselves. They say, well, I'm going to be happier once I leave. I'm going to be able to have this free time. I'm going to be able to focus on myself. I'm going to be able to, have some freedom here. And on the other side of that, there's, you all wouldn't be married if there wasn't at least some amount of reward here for getting married. And those rewards for being together have to be greater than leaving. Otherwise, they're still going to be heading in that other direction. And then fourth, there has to be some ability to see some immediate benefits. And you might say, well, that's childish. You know, people should be able to look at the long-term picture here. Most people are pretty terrible at that. I would say the people that really get in the spotlight, who become huge successes, that are, are idols in life, tend to be those people who can look at the long-term picture, that can look at the long-term rewards. But I would say most people are really focused a little bit more on the here and now. And so you can, sometimes do this by starting those changes yourself. You're starting to get things going. It'd be those four things. And once again, it's an ability to reliably meet both partners' needs. It's coming back is easier than leaving. It has a bigger reward than leaving, and they have some ability to see some immediate benefits. And I think if you can get those factors in and get that solidly in place, your partner says, these things are right here in the relationship, I think your chances for reconciliation, for coming back together, are going to be so much greater than without these things.
Right. So I want to go to a couple comments here. I was scrolling through and I just want to clarify a few things. I got one comment. So porn heals anxiety. And that is not what I was saying. That was a Band-Aid that this person was using for their anxiety. We are not recommending porn as a healing treatment for anxiety. It is the opposite. It is just a Band-Aid that this person used for their anxiety. Just like we would talk about any other kind of addiction, a meth addiction, a sex addiction, anything like that. It's just a coping mechanism that people use instead of facing their real problems. So I hope that that's clear. Sometimes when we're sharing here, it's easy that we understand what we're saying. We want to make sure that it's conveyed clearly to you what we mean with that. All right. We also got a couple questions here. What if they don't want to, let's see. Oh no, I lost it. What do you do when they don't want to get help for their root issues?
I think part of this, I mean, that's a really good question because it's really hard to start offering some of those things, those rewards that I was talking about, hard to start meeting their needs, hard to show those immediate benefits if there's problems on the other side that are kind of keeping you away. It's just, it complicates things quite a bit. There's a big mix of things that need to be done if they are being stubborn about their own problems and they're saying they don't need to change anything. But in my opinion, you can more reliably get them to start making some changes themselves if you can draw them back into the marriage by offering things first. The process that I almost always go through with just about all my clients, I tell them, okay, we're going to give what's needed first and then bring things into balance. And we're going to give a little bit more and then bring things into balance. And we can kind of go forward stepwise here. And I think in this case, with a spouse who is being stubborn about their own problems, we can start solving problems on our own end first. And then we can start bringing things into balance a little bit easier because, you know, once they're a little bit more drawn into the marriage, once the marriage is a little bit more valuable to them, we can start setting some boundaries and start holding them accountable to a greater degree. There's a little bit more leverage there, I feel.
Yeah, you can't just start with that right off the bat. You know, it's always important that we focus on what we can control. And like Mark and I said, we are like the ICU unit of marriages. And so in this situation, most of the couples that we work with, their spouse wants out and they're not willing to work on the relationship. And so we work with the person that does want to work on the relationship, that does want to save it. And when you're dealing with that kind of situation, you have to be willing to go first. Now that doesn't mean that you're the only one working on things forever, because that would not be healthy. That would not be balanced. That would not be thriving. So like Mark said here is that you do it first. And then, like you said, you bring things into balance when they have drawn closer to you. It's kind of a process that goes on with that. All right. So really good comments, some really good things here. So Mark, that is what it takes to get your spouse back. Can you get them back? That's a big question. Now there's two sure signs that you cannot, or a marriage most likely cannot be saved. And that is if there's any kind of physical or sexual abuse going on, if it's a very unhealthy, unsafe situation, or if there's absolutely no communication. If you do not communicate whatsoever, there's a restraining order and you live on opposite ends of the world and you never ever talk to each other, well, then the opportunity for you is just not there. You have to be able to have some kind of communication, even if it's just surface level, even if it's tense, even if it's uncomfortable, even if it's volatile, that's still communication and we can work with that, right? We can learn how to pattern interrupt and change those things around. And if it's just surface level, if they're cold, if they're closed off, then that's why we use our communication toolbox and our conversation starters that we talked about to be able to open up that communication by showing understanding first. As we show understanding to our spouse in time and consistency, then that will eventually be brought into balance and our spouse will show that understanding towards us as well. Same with meeting needs. If we meet their needs first, just like Leah did with her husband, she met his needs first. Then it was later brought into balance where he is now meeting her needs as well. So I hope that that clarifies that kind of bigger picture.
Now, I want to clarify something here myself. This is really just scratching the surface here. We're saying, it's like, once again, saying to the meth addict, why don't you just stop using meth. And we're saying here, well, you just need to start meeting some needs for your partner. You know, a lot of times there are reasons why these needs are not being met. There's patterns that are really deeply ingrained in the relationship. And I mean, a lot of you, I can imagine maybe struggling with, okay, how do I actually go about this process? Honestly, this is what we're here for. I mean, this is what the coaching programs that we offer are for, is to help you walk through this process and get some feedback, you know, help have someone hold you accountable for your own actions and whatnot. Because as helpful as we like to think that our podcasts and other information are, it doesn't really beat a personal touch, you know, someone right there working with you.
Right. It's kind of like the 30,000 foot view, the high level overview of like what needs to happen, the steps. But it's kind of like if we just went to Leah and we're like, hey, you just need to make changes and just meet his needs. She would scratch her head and be like, I have no idea what you're talking about. Right. So it took really diving in deep and kind of like a doctor looking at all the symptoms and everything to give you an accurate diagnosis of what's going on so that then she could understand, oh, now I see what it is. Now I see why he's pulling away from me and towards this other woman. And then we're able to, you know, customize exactly what she needed to do to give her that clarity and solve those root issues. Just like for me, having a coach and a doctor, an expert gives me clarity when I can't see the full picture myself. You know, we're so in our own lives. We're so in our own heads. We're so in our own relationships that we can't see clearly the bigger picture like a real expert can, that can go and clearly show us exactly what to do. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's exactly why we do the coaching, is to help you find that plan and find out exactly how you can solve those root issues and be able to set healthy boundaries, be able to open communication, be able to restore trust, heal from past pain. We got a comment here. This program is awesome. Yeah. Thank you. Awesome. So if you want help with this, like Mark and I said here, and you're ready to get your spouse back in love with you, to leave the other person, you know, so that they don't have, it's easier for them to come back, right? It's easier. They want to, they're naturally gravitated to wanting to be back with you again. I'm not going to say effortless, but it's easy. So if that resonates with you, then I encourage you to book a free breakthrough call with us, and we will go right in with you and figure out exactly what the best options for you and your marriage are. And you can do that over at highthrivecoaching.com/apply. Oh, good. And another comment here. And you let us know when we're getting off track. Exactly. It's all about that accountability and making those tiny course corrections so that we can reach our destination safely. All right. Now it's time for our marriage myth buster. Mark, I'm going to say the marriage myth buster, and then you are going to bust it for us. All right. The marriage myth buster is, I will never understand them or why they want to leave me.
And we pull these actually from comments that we see in the groups and just other people make. And so this is an important thing, because this isn't just coming out of nowhere. But when I first read this, I think language is very important when we are describing things. And the words here, I will never understand them and why they want to leave me. I think part of this is a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's part of the problem here is an issue of mindset and how people think about their struggles and problems. If you keep telling yourself, I'm never going to do this, they'll never understand me, the likelihood that you'll have any understanding is very little, unless something magical, unless someone else intervenes here. The thing is, any problem can be understood. I even think really terrible actions can be understood, even if they're not excusable. I was talking with someone close to me, and I think in part this is one of my superpowers, is to offer some understanding even when the things that are going on are not really good things. We was talking to someone close, and we had just learned that someone that we had known for a long time was arrested for, and I don't want to give information. I don't know who's listening in on this, so I just don't want to identify. But they were arrested. They're going to be in jail for a while for something that was, you know, some people felt was very morally wrong. It could have hurt a lot of people. And here's the thing is, you know, there could have been some justification to be angry with this person. And my wife and I got talking about this, like, well, what if someone like this wanted help? What could someone help this kind of person and not be appalled at what they're saying? And I was saying, well, let's take some time to understand what happened here. And I think the same can be, while I'm being very ambiguous with the problem, I think we'll apply it a little bit more broadly. I think the same can be said even for other generally misunderstood groups. You know, we might universally condemn hate groups. And I think, you know, people like neo-Nazis, I think it's terrible what they're doing. I want to make that very clear. I'm not like condoning any actions. But what I'm saying is a lot of these hate groups, a lot of their behavior stems from a lot of fear and pain, a lot of sense of loss. And to just say they are terrible people doesn't solve that problem. And if anything, you know, as people push onto these hate groups and, you know, say what terrible people they are, I think the only thing that's going to happen is they're going to push back. And like I said, not to condemn anything that they're doing, but what I'm saying is their behavior stems from something understandable. Violent crime may come from desperation and hopelessness. Someone pushed to the edge to the point where they feel like that's their only choice. Your partner and you, and here's the point I wanted to make, each have valid reasons for feeling the way that you do. It might not make sense to you right now, but on some level it does make sense. Otherwise, you wouldn't be doing what you're doing. For the most part, except in very extreme edge cases, people don't just do really damaging things randomly. And so the point I'm trying to make here is, you know, getting away from the idea that you can never understand each other to the point where you can say, you know what, there's probably a very good reason for the way my partner feels or the way that I feel. And maybe if I take some time to try to dig in deep a little bit here, we probably can have some understanding, even if it, you know, doesn't directly lead to solutions right away. I think understanding is a really good first step. So I feel like that myth there, that marriage myth or that argument sometimes that people have in their relationships is completely false. And there's always ways to find understanding here.
Thank you. I'm going to give a little bonus MythBuster, and this just brought to my mind the other common thing that we hear of, I can never forgive. I can never let this go. And I would just challenge those with that kind of feeling that I can never forgive. I can never let this go. And remember that it's not about them. This was a lesson that was truly life-altering for me. And the most healing thing I've ever done in my life was shifting from the place of, I can't let this go. I will never forgive. If I forgive, then I must be weak. If I let it go, then I could get hurt again. And realize that the only person I was damaging when I was holding on to that pain and that bitterness was myself. It wasn't hurting the other person at all. It wasn't making them change. It wasn't showing them, oh, you're hurting me, and so look at what you've done. No, the only thing it was doing was hurting myself. In fact, it wasn't just hurting myself. It was actually hurting other people in my life because I was hurting. And when we are hurting and we are not strong and we are in pain, it affects others. It affected my children. It affected my husband. It affected multitude of relationships that I had and held me back. And I can promise that as we seek to understand one another, note that understand does not mean accept. It doesn't mean accept the bad behavior. It means understand why the behavior happened at all. Yes. It means putting ourselves in someone else's shoes, because when we're in someone else's shoes and we see the things that they've been through and the pain and the hurt that they have, the anxiety that they're dealing with, the difficulties and the challenges and maybe the bullying that they've gone through, then we can have compassion for that person. And that understanding and that compassion allows us to heal ourselves and to forgive so that we can be well ourselves.
The thing that you said there, you're talking about, you know, never being able to forgive, in this case, never being able to understand. Just the last point I want to make here. My wife and I have been talking about this quite a lot recently is, you know, how you describe things. And it sounds like this shift that you made, you started describing this problem different from, you know, never being able to forgive and this is going to make me weak, and just starting to describe it a little bit differently using a different language. And I think there's a lot of power when with how we think about things, how what we say about things certainly has an impact. Anyways.
That is it. Thank you so much, Mark. And I hope that this has been helpful. Like we said, this is just the beginning. This is just the really high level overview of the process that it needs to happen to uncover why our spouse wants out, to look at those root issues, and then what we need to do to get them back. So next week, we're going to share with you how to help them change their story. And we didn't go super deep into the story. I talked about it in podcast one with our path method, but that story is the reasons justifying why they want to leave, right? It's those symptoms of I'm in love with someone else. I need to find myself, right? All of those different things that we hear. And so we want to help them to change that story that they have about us and about the relationship. And what happens when we help them to change their story about us is that they have the ability to open their heart again and fall back in love with us. And I'm going to share with you a little secret that changed everything for me personally. So thank you, Mark, and we will see you all next time.
See you, everyone.
Thanks for listening to The Thriving Marriage, your A to Z blueprint for not just surviving marriage, but thriving. Until next time, my friends, thrive on.